Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, Marcia James reports on a new project proposed by the World Bank.
The World Bank Group plans to invest close to $2.5 billion over 5 years in education projects to help girls between the ages of 12 and 17. The bank says that about 75% of these investments are expected to come from its program for the world's poorest countries. Most of the countries are in South Asia and in Africa, south of the Sahara. Those areas reportedly have the highest number of out-of-school girls. The investments were announced by Jim Yong Kim, president of the World Bank Group. Empowering and educating adolescent girls is one of the best ways to stop poverty from being passed from generation to generation, Kim said. He spoke Wednesday at the spring meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. The meetings are taking place through Sunday in Washington, D.C. Michelle Obama, the wife of U.S. President Barack Obama, also spoke at the announcement. She said the investments in education will benefit millions of girls. The First Lady also said it will help build the workforce in each country. The World Bank says a total of almost 62 million girls around the world are not in school. A World Bank study found that a woman's lifetime earnings increased by 18% for every year she attended school. The bank said its investments will support efforts to provide a quality education in secondary school and financial assistance to adolescent girls. The money will help to finance clean drinking water and toilets in schools. I'm Marcia James.
A new survey of young Arab adults says that nearly 4 in 5 would not join the Islamic State. A similar percentage says that Islamic State will not achieve its goal of establishing an Islamic government. Bruce Alpert has the report.
The large majority of young Arab adults say they do not support Islamic State militants. And more than 75% say they do not believe that the Islamic State will create a caliphate or government based on Islamic law. These are among the findings from interviews done with 3,500 young Arabs in 14 nations. They were aged 18 to 24. The interviews were done by Astaz Bursan Marstella, a public relations company. The research comes at a time European governments worry about radicalized young people joining the Islamic State and carrying out terrorist attacks. 78% of young adults reject the Islamic State, even if it did not use so much violence. 13%, down from 19% in 2015, say they would support Islamic State if it was less violent. As to why some young people join the militant group, 24% said they believe it is because of a shortage of jobs. 17% say the support comes because some like the Islamic State's view of Islam. Hassan Hassan is an Islamic State expert at the Tahrir Institute for Middle East Policy in Washington, D.C. He offered his views on the survey and why young people continue to join the Islamic State. It did not simply invent the problems the responders identified as factors. Put another way, Islamic State is a symptom of a growing disease that needs to be tackled, and not just the disease itself, he said in a statement. Some other findings of the survey include, more than half of Arab young adults said they believe that religion is too big an influence in the Middle East. 63% said they view the United States as an ally, 32% as an enemy. But in Iraq, just 6% of young Iraqis view the United States as an ally, and 93% as an enemy. Fewer than half the young Arabs, 44%, said they believe they can get good jobs in their countries. Only 2% of young people in Yemen say they can get good jobs. In Libya, the percentage is 7%. Just 36% of young Arabs feel the Arab world is better off after the Arab Spring uprisings. That is down from 72% in 2012, at the height of the unrest. I'm Bruce Alpert.
An American warship and a Russian attack aircraft came in close contact this week in the Baltic Sea. Jim Dressback has the story.
Russian military airplanes flew over an American warship in international waters earlier this week. The Russian Defense Ministry said Thursday that its Su-24 planes were performing test flights in the Baltic Sea at the time of the flyovers. The first of the two incidents took place April 11. Two Russian attack aircraft flew past the USS Donald Cook 20 times, according to U.S. officials. They said the aircraft came within 1,000 meters of the ship. The planes reportedly flew as low as 30 meters above the sea. On April 12, Russian aircraft did 11 simulated attack passes above the Donald Cook. This time, the planes were joined by a Russian military helicopter that took pictures of the U.S. ship. At the time of the incident, the ship was in waters near Kaliningrad, a Russian territory between Lithuania and Poland. The Donald Cook had just come from Poland and was sailing out to sea. The Russian Defense Ministry said its aircraft observed all international rules when they flew over the U.S. ship. It also said the ship was in operational proximity of the Russian Navy's Baltic Fleet base. The Russian news agency TASS reported the Donald Cook was about 70 kilometers from the base. Sailors on the Donald Cook tried to contact the planes by radio, a U.S. official said, but there was no response. The official added that, according to the commanding officer of the Donald Cook, his assessment was that this was unsafe and unprofessional. The official described the Russian aircraft as wings clean. That means the ship's crew did not see any weapons on the planes. The U.S. military says a formal investigation of the incident is underway. I'm Jim Dresbach.
Former New Zealand Prime Minister Helen Clark says she is a candidate to become the first woman Secretary General of the United Nations. Clark is among eight candidates for the office, according to the New York Times. Four are men, four are women. Clark, 66, served as the Prime Minister of New Zealand from 1999 to 2008. As Prime Minister, Clark was wildly popular. She increased the minimum wage in New Zealand, offered student loans at zero interest, and signed a trade agreement with China. She started out growing up on a farm and became the first in her family to go to college. She starred in a Travel Channel tour of New Zealand, leading viewers around her country. She introduced the world to New Zealand with a televised mountain climb, a bungee jump off a bridge, and an overnight camping trip. She was also a guest star of a soap opera in New Zealand called Shortland Street. Clark is a big user of social media. Her Twitter page, @HelenClarkUNDP, has more than 119,000 followers. In 2009, she was voted the greatest living New Zealander in a New Zealand Herald poll. New Zealand Prime Minister John Key called Clark a proven leader and added that her entire life has been dedicated to foreign policy. That's been her area of great passion and interest. She has been the top official in the United Nations Development Program since 2009. Clark said she would try to reform the UN. She wants the world body to refocus its efforts stopping civil wars and extremists. The other women being considered are Irina Bokova of Bulgaria, Natalia German of Moldova, and Vesna Pusic of Croatia. More candidates could be added during the next few months. Many members of the UN are advocating for the Secretary General position to go to a woman. Russia wants the next UN Secretary General to come from Eastern Europe, according to VOA News. The new Secretary General will take over for Ban Ki-moon. He will step down in December after serving 2 5-year terms. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
This year, the U.S. National Park Service turns 100. America's 28th president, Woodrow Wilson, formed the National Park Service in 1916 to protect the wild and wonderful landscapes in the United States. Today, the organization manages nearly 34 million hectares of land. The organization is celebrating all year long. And starting April 16th, the National Park Service will also be celebrating National Park Week, The National Park Service manages more than 400 national parks, historic sites, monuments, and more. There are 127 national parks that usually charge visitors admission. Visitors to Arches National Park in Utah, for example, pay $25 per car. The Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona charges $30 per car. But during National Park Week, visitors can enter all national parks across the country free of charge. National Park Week this year runs from April 16th to April 24th. Earth Day is also celebrated during National Park Week on April 22nd. The National Park Service urges people to volunteer at nearby national parks on that day. To celebrate the start of National Park Week, here are some fun facts. The National Park Service started 100 years ago, but some parks are over 100 years old. Yellowstone National Park in the western United States was established in 1872 as the first national park in America. It was also the world's first national park. Each of America's 50 states has at least one location managed by the Park Service. The largest park is the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and Preserve in Alaska. It covers more than 5 million hectares of land. Alaska is also the state with the most national parks. The smallest National Park Service site is the Tadeusz Kosciuszko National Memorial in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The memorial honors Kosciuszko, a Polish freedom fighter who designed defense walls during the American Revolutionary War. The newest National Park Service site is not far from us here at the Voice of America. It is the Belmont Paul Women's Equality National Monument in Washington, D.C. The site is an historic house and museum on Capitol Hill. It honors women's right to vote and equal rights in America. It became a part of the National Park Service this year on April 12th. Over 300 million people visited U.S. national parks last year. That was a 5% increase compared to 2014. I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks for that report, Dan. Ashley, you have been exploring America's national parks as part of our new weekly series. What national park will our audience hear about next?
Tomorrow, we will head to Mesa Verde National Park in the western state of Colorado. The park's name means green table in Spanish. Mesa Verde is a beautiful spot, but it also has a fascinating human history.
Indeed. People who lived there long ago carved out homes and whole villages on the sides of rocky hills.
You're right. They are called cliff dwellings. They date back more than 1,000 years. Listen tomorrow to the VOA Learning English podcast for more.
And now, Pete Musto and Jill Robbins present this week's lesson in Everyday Grammar.
We often need to tell others what someone else said. There are two ways to do this. One is to say the same words and use quotation marks. That is direct speech. The other method is to summarize or tell about what someone said. This is called reported speech. Before we get into the rules for reporting speech, here are the terms we are using to explain it. In the sentence, she said that she wanted a cookie. She is the subject, said is the reporting verb, that is the conjunction, and she wanted a cookie is the reported speech clause.
To get this kind of sentence right, there are four things you should keep in mind. The first rule is to choose a reporting verb and tense. When did the speech happen? With current, repeated, or recent events, the reporting verb is in the present tense. He says he is hungry, so let's go to lunch. A habitual or repeated statement is in the present tense. Everyone says the water is safe to drink. For reporting less immediate speech, choose the past tense. The reporting verb is often said, but it can also be told, or other verbs like ordered, stated, or reported, depending on the situation. When reporting questions, you can use verbs like asked or requested.
The second rule is to change the perspective or point of view. That means I becomes he, she, or they.
Mary said, I ate the pie, becomes.
She said that she ate the pie. The boys said, we are coming tomorrow, becomes.
They said they are coming tomorrow.
Next, choose whether to include that or if. You can say, he says he is at home, or he says that he is at home. That is a conjunction here, linking the two parts of the sentence. It is optional. Another conjunction, if, is required when reporting on a question. He asked me if I knew how to play tennis.
The fourth rule is to backshift the tense. This is the trickiest part of reported speech. When the reporting verb is in the past tense, the verb in the reported clause is in the past tense too. The verb aspect, showing whether the action is completed, matches. Here are some examples.
I am buying my ticket.
He said he was buying his ticket. I have fixed my bicycle.
She said she had fixed her bicycle.
Reporting speech in English would be easy if these rules were all learners needed to know. But as usual, there is more to learn. Let's look at what happens with questions and modals.
When we report questions, we have to pay attention to the auxiliary verb. These are words like do, be, and have. Yes or no questions begin with an auxiliary verb, such as, do you like pizza? To report that question, drop the auxiliary and add if.
He asked me if I liked pizza.
Learners often make the mistake of leaving the auxiliary verb in the reported speech.
He asked me, do I like pizza?
Don't say it like that. That is a mistake. Information questions start with a question word.
Where are you going?
To report on these, simply change the pronoun and word order. She asked me where I was going. Here, learners often make the mistake of keeping the same word order.
She asked me where was I going.
Don't say it like that. That is a mistake. A similar word order switch appears with the verb be in questions.
They asked, when is the party?
They asked me when the party was. The question word when remains. Be moves from a position before the noun to after the noun.
Finally, pay attention to whether the speech you are reporting uses a modal verb. Will, can, and shall change to would, could, and should when reported. Will is used to make statements about the future in English. When reporting this kind of statement, will becomes would. Compare these sentences. Kelly said, I will pick up the sandwiches.
Kelly said she would pick up the sandwiches.
Modal verbs may appear in questions as well. Katie asked, can you answer the phone while I'm out?
Katie asked me if I could answer the phone while she was out.
If the modal verb is already in its past form, it does not change when reported.
George stated, I would not do that.
George said he would not do that.
Let's try a few sentences. I'll say the direct speech, and you make a sentence in reported speech. Our boss said, you can all go home early today.
Our boss said we could all go home early. Anna asked, when is your birthday?
Anna asked me when my birthday was. Adam said, I am leaving on Tuesday.
Adam said he was leaving on Tuesday. Chris said, I will bring the cake.
Chris said he would bring the cake.
Reported speech sometimes shows up in popular songs. The singer Lisa Loeb begins the song Stay with a reported verb in the present tense to show that the action is a habit.
You say, I only hear what I want to. So all the time, so.
Later, she reports something in the past, so the reported speech verb is in the past tense.
You said that I was naive, I thought that I was strong. I thought, hey, I can leave, oh, but now I know that I was wrong, 'cause I missed you.
Follow these simple rules, and you will be reporting speech like a pro.
She said that you would be reporting speech like a pro. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.